With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with Minnie Lane and Matthew O'Connor, and we talk about their new film, The Pickup Game. It premiered at Hot Ducks this year and had a fascinating conversation with Matthew and Minnie about dating, about the pickup game, about relationships really is what we were really talking about. But we got into things about that sort of surrounded this idea of loneliness and love and fear. And something called a fake persona, and Minnie talks a great deal about that. We got into the objectification of women, and about the theory behind dating, and about relationships, and what really this is all about. We talked about community, and about value, and self worth, and fear of rejection. This film is a fascinating film. You're going to want to see it. It's disturbing on some levels to see what degree people will go to. I guess to get what they want and what living on the edge of fear will really do. We talk about empathy and NLP and hypnosis and honesty and self-development, and you're going to hear why bubble wrapping your heart is just really not a good idea. So stay tuned. Minnie Lane and Matthew O'Connor coming up talking about their new film, The Pickup Game. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my writing and my public speaking. You can purchase a book there that I wrote a few years back called Real Change is Incremental. I'd love it if you did that. And also, if you want to get behind the work we're doing here at Face to Face, you can do that and support us on patreon.com. $1 a month, $5 a month goes a long way to offsetting some of the costs. And if you can't do that, and I totally understand, maybe leave a review for us on iTunes or Spotify. Share the podcast with your friends and family. You know, if you're a Facebook user, share it with 1,000 of your closest friends. That'd be fantastic. Let's get word out on the street about Face to Face. And we're coming up on about 450 interviews. If you'd like to advertise here, you can do that. We've got quite a diverse demographic. We get into a few different countries around the world. So reach out to us on facetofacelive.ca to do that. And don't forget rabble.ca as well. I'm also hosted on that platform. Face to Face is there, along with some other great podcasts, bloggers, writers, journalists, people writing and talking about things that matter. That's rabble.ca. And stay tuned, coming right up, that's with a conversation with Minnie Lane, Matthew O'Connor, and their new film, The Pickup Game. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by two very special guests here with us today on Face to Face, here to talk about their new film, The Pickup Game. We have Minnie Lane and Matthew O'Connor joining us today. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
So, Matthew, you're in Cannes. Minnie, you're in the UK, I think. I'm in Toronto. I understand, Minnie, you're coming to Toronto. A bit of a whirlwind around the film. Matthew, maybe you could just sort of give us a little bit of context about The Pickup Game. What it's about for the listeners before we dive in. And I've got lots of questions. Lots of questions.
Okay, so I will try and give as brief a summary as possible. The Pickup Game is essentially about the pickup industry, which For those people that don't know what that is, it is essentially an industry of kind of gurus or sort of self-styled gurus, and they travel the world and they charge a fair amount of money to teach other men. They're all men. All of these, most of these gurus are males, and they teach other men a system that they say will guarantee success with women. And it's something that most people have heard about, most people are kind of aware of or on the fringes of society, but they don't really understand what the belief systems of these people are, how the industry works, the kind of things that they're teaching. And the documentary is a very probing look into that world and into the teachers that teach this system, the students that come on these courses, and the women that get involved with both of those groups.
So Matthew, I understand you're a co-director with your brother Barnaby. Tell me how you guys were drawn to the film. What was it? Were you watching another documentary? Something on an interview program? You read an article? How did you step into this kind of crazy world?
Okay, so really there were three things. The first thing was there was a book that was written about this 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago, back in 2005, called The Game, and that was about about five of these pickup artists living in Hollywood, living in a big mansion all together, and their kind of experiences of going out and the kind of tactics and strategies that they would share and discuss. So I'd always been aware of it as a kind of subculture. But then about 3 or 4 years ago, I met a friend of mine she was an actress, and I met her on a shoot, and she was a conversation girl for one of these pickup companies. So basically what would happen is students would go to these seminars and they'd learn kind of the basics of conversation skills, and then they would go and practice on her and she would give them feedback. The idea is that most courses have got two elements. They've got a daytime element or a seminar element where people kind of sit in the classroom and they learn theory, if you will. And then there's a practical element where they actually go out into the streets or the nightclubs or bars, and they try and apply what they've learned. And she was, and I just thought that was an incredibly strange, interesting concept. And that was really the seeds of the documentary. So then we started to approach people, and we started emailing a lot of people that work within the industry, and we were very fortunate in many ways to get an interview with Ross Jeffries, who's the guy that's largely credited with starting the industry back in the 1980s. And once we had that first interview, that managed to open a lot of other doors, and because it gave us some credibility with the other instructors, right, most of whom are very wary of the media.
I would think so. It seems to me it's the kind of thing you don't want layers peeled back on. There's being sort of mysterious, I suppose, is a real strength in this field. Minnie, you are and tell us, you know, what you do and how you stepped into the project. But is it fair to call you a dating coach? Is that a fair title?
Yeah, well, I work as a dating and personal development coach now. So it's really about personal development, but with the angle of helping you connect more with yourself and connect more with others, which leads to better dating as well. So I started off in the pickup industry, which I joined by chance. I met a pickup artist in a bar, and he tried to pick me up, and I just recognized what he did because I'd read the book The Game. And I was sort of fresh out of a degree in communication and psychology, and was just sort of fascinated to meet somebody from this industry. And we had sort of a half hour chat about female psychology. And then he invited me along to one of these boot camps to sort of see how it went on, because he said it would be really good to have a female on the team. He'd never met a female that had anything to do with it, that knew anything about it before. So Yeah, originally I just went down out of fascination. I felt like I'd just been given a key into this weird underground world. And like Matt's friend, I started off as a conversation coach. So it was really just sort of intuitively helping people with that side of things. And, you know, this is a huge industry. So there's a whole spectrum of stuff that gets taught. And, you know, some of it is helpful stuff, you know, helping people with conversation skills, body language, gain a bit of confidence. You can be helping people to grow, but then there's this other whole side of the industry, which is quite manipulative. And the longer I stayed there, the more I saw this sort of not very nice treatment going on that starts with sort of small objectification of women and then quite quickly snowballs into some quite horrific treatment of women. So I wasn't in the industry very long. I sort of left and decided I wanted to do it my own way. And as a female, found it quite easy to get private clients. So that was my route into it. And now I teach something, you know, quite different. I've been in this industry for 12 years, so I've developed my own way of doing things, really, which is off the back of a deep spiritual journey that I've been on myself, really, on long meditation retreats, things like that. I've been through a lot of psychotherapy. I've studied psychology. So working out just a better way of doing things that doesn't involve any sort of lying or manipulating or creating a character that isn't really you, which is just completely unnecessary from my perspective.
It's so interesting that you talk about lying, and Matthew, it's so funny when the phrase you used earlier when you said they learn theory, if you will. I mean, the it's just so absurd to me on a certain level, and yet kind of makes sense on another, because, you know, as you bring out so well in the film, and by the way, congratulations on the film. It's fascinating. It's engaging. It's I hate to say it's entertaining, but it is. You know, when you're talking about a subject like this, it's one of those. It almost feels like an expose in a sense, but yet I think it's so much deeper than that. I mean, we're talking about fear and loneliness and confidence and being able to relate to other human beings. You know, I mean, isn't this what life is really all about? But what I was going to ask or say is, Minnie and to Matthew, both of you, I mean, don't we all kind of on a certain level deceive others when we first meet them? Isn't that kind of what William Shakespeare said? You know, clothes make the man, right? So it's about our appearances, and people don't really, it seems at least on the surface, if you're out at a club or you're dancing, they're more concerned about how you look and how you dance and what you're drinking, I suppose, than maybe who you really are. But there's a couple of questions embedded there. Do you want to step into that, either of you?
Well, I think that's in a way one of the problems with the industry is where is the line between it being okay and just a bit of fun and teasing and just a bit of a game and it becoming something else? And it's not very clear. And, you know, when my mum met my dad, my dad had sort of met her through a friend and really liked her. And then he wanted to bump into her again. So he found out where she was graduating and he sort of accidentally on purpose bumped into her outside where she was graduating, pretended it was just coincidence and, you know, used the opportunity to go on a date with her. Is there anything wrong with that? No, absolutely not. You know, I don't think anybody would think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with walking up to a stranger and creating a conversation and starting a conversation if your intentions are good. And how do you measure someone's intentions? Mm-hmm. And that's the difficulty, is that it's not necessarily the actions that are the problem. It's the intention behind them. What's the purpose of you saying this thing? You know, is it just a line to open up a conversation just because you didn't know how else to break the ice? Or is it that your intention is to manipulate her and get her into bed, you know, using psychological tricks? You know, because to me, that's something very different. And I think for me it's when there's a lot of deception about your intentions. So I think a lot of the game works by creating an atmosphere where a girl really feels that you've noticed something special about her, or you know, where you've really chosen her and something is amazing about her to you. And I think that it sort of works because women then drop their guard. I think a lot of women do have this guard, sort of protective guard up against men, you know, rightly so in some cases, because, you know, a lot of men unfortunately don't have very good intentions with women, and a lot of women do get hurt, and vice versa, you know.
Minnie, it's interesting, and Matthew, I'd love your insight on this too, because I'm sure there was an awful lot of aha moments for you and your brother, as you were making this film and as you interviewed, is it Ross Jeffries and so on? I mean, at one point, doesn't he say at one point he feels like a war criminal for some of the ways that he's treated women in particular, but men also, the sort of the underlying deception of it all. But I just wondered, are there seminars like this for women, or is this entirely a male dominated industry?
I think the business, this is quite difficult to talk about in some ways, because I feel that this documentary is about the pickup industry. I think there is a reverse business model that is aimed at women. I think a lot of pickup courses and a lot of pickup instructors, they in terms of their marketing, they're selling sex.
Right. Okay. You know, fair enough.
You know, sex and variety. I think there is a reverse business model for women, but in those instances, I think a lot of those coaches are selling love. You know, find Mr. Right, find the one, achieve your perfectly well-balanced life. So I don't think it's the same type of messaging in reverse, but I do think one of the fascinating things, and I'm, you know, this might be a bit of a tangent, but I think the business model that is used in pickup to kind of get people in and to get people to invest in the lifestyle is something that once you notice it, you actually see it across a lot of different industries.
Right.
Yeah.
So in other words, once you've learned how to define it, or once you can't, in other words, you can't go back once you know what it is. Is that sort of what you're saying?
So could you just elaborate on that?
Yeah. Like, so once you've made that definition, once you've had that aha moment and you go, oh, this is what's really going on, this is what this is really all about, you start to see other connections with, I don't know, lifestyle advertising, for instance, or maybe reality TV, or you know, relational interactions in a workplace and that kind of thing. Is that sort of what you mean?
I mean, I'm talking specifically about the business model.
Okay.
Because some of these courses, I mean, some people pay a lot of money to go on these courses, you know, anything from $2,000 or $3,000 for a weekend to $10,000 for a week. Now, obviously, you can't go up to someone and just say, want to spend $10,000 and spend a week with me. You know, that no one's going to buy into that. So as a kind of pickup instructor, the people that run these courses, they have to get people to buy into the lifestyle.
Right.
And
right.
One of the things that the documentary goes into is, well, how do you do that? You know, what is the business model behind getting people to invest in this idea and getting them to invest in this lifestyle before then asking them for the $2,000 or the $3,000 or the $10,000 payment? And I think once you understand that business model, that business model is quite common. It's not contained to the pickup industry. It's used in a lot of online businesses.
It's a sales model, essentially. It's teaching. Yeah. They become very, very good salesmen. And, you know, it's no coincidence that they also become very good salesmen of themselves. Because when do you need a good salesman? It's when your product isn't as good as you're making it out to be. That's when you need a good sales package. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's exactly what's happening. You know, they're selling themselves as being these, you know, high value males, and actually they're not at all, because they're not really even being themselves. It's a sort of fake persona that they've developed, this sort of alpha male character that they're playing, and it's not really real. And actually they don't have good connection in their life. Yes, they get a lot of sex, but to the detriment of their own health, actually, because they end up lonely. And I've seen it happen time and time again. I've seen many people in this industry have real breakdowns because it's not sustainable. You know, you're not letting someone see your real self.
Yeah. So Minnie, it's fascinating. And this is why I love documentary film, because any great doc always works, you know, works on so many different levels. But a couple thoughts I want to toss out, and love to go wherever you want to go. But, you know, and this question's for both of you for sure. But, you know, is it love? Is it loneliness? Is it money? I mean, of those three things, what really is driving the industry? And then to your point, Minnie, I'm not convinced these I'm going to call them salespeople, because I don't want to call them much else. But anyway, these salespeople, are they really as successful as they say they are? You know, I mean, is that like the deception goes really deep? And I think you pull that out in the film really well, Matthew, on the way they'll stand on a corner for hours with a camera on them just to get that one right interaction, you know, that they can then go and exploit, you know, for their own purposes.
Well, yeah, I think it depends how you're measuring success. If you're measuring it in terms of money and status within the industry and within their peers and stuff like that, then yes, they are successful. But, you know, success in a sense, because if you look at how the model works, it's a bit like a sort of pyramid scheme in a way where the entire thing is being funded by the students. So people come in from the bottom as students, they learn the skills and then they start teaching the skills. And then they have to suck in a load of people underneath them. So it's all being propped up by itself, and it could just collapse at any one time. You know, especially the status thing. I think that's when it gets really, really dangerous. Because there are no females in this industry in the real pickup schools. It's like male bravado, which sort of breeds itself, and it's like an inbreeding of male ego and testosterone that creates this horrible atmosphere where people, and you know, you see in the documentary, it's not even just bad treatment of women, it's also people being racist and just horrendous stuff going on.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about not even just underlying tones of racism and misogyny, but it's pretty in your face. I mean, I love one of the phrases, and I think it was Eric who said it, you know, the transactional approach is just so fundamentally disturbing, you know. And I suppose we do treat some other human beings like transactions from time to time, you know. If I go to get my tires changed, I just go to get my tires changed. I'm not hanging out with the guy. I'm not having a coffee and a smoke with the guy afterwards to get to know him and his family. But I mean, it's as if there's another line, another moral, another ethical line that some of these guys have crossed. But I think Eric's line was something about, you know, meet the objectives and of each phase and then you get the girl, you know, like as if, wow, it's like, here's these 6 points, follow these and you're done. You know, it's just it's kind of it's unsettling at best, actually.
Well, I think also just to kind of build on one of the earlier points of, you know, how honest is everybody when they meet? We are bombarded with messages, and this is something that Minnie and I have talked about a lot, because obviously we've had conversations behind the making of this, and you know, we are bombarded every day with messages of be something else, be better.
Sure.
It's almost part of the human condition of like, if I can just get to this stage, I will be happy. Life will be easy and straightforward. And I think that a lot of this plays into that. A lot of the pickup industry plays into that. Of if you can just become the alpha male, if you can just, you know, it's about becoming something else. And I think what I like so much about what Minnie is trying to communicate, and this is really why she's such a big part of the documentary, is this idea of, you know, we already do have a lot of value. I remember during the Q&As, and I'm not sure I really like value as a word to describe people, but just to try and kind of get the, when we did the Q&As, there were people kind of saying, well these guys seem, they don't seem that unusual, you know, the as in the students. They were talking about the students, and they were saying, I imagine the students would be much more socially awkward, much more needy, nerdy and geeky. And it's like, and actually they seem fairly, and part of that is they don't understand that they're fine already.
Right.
You know, they have a sense of inadequacy and a sense of insecurity. And with many of them, I would obviously spend a lot of time around these people and around the kind of seminars, and I just think you don't need you don't need any of this. You have it in your head that you do, but you don't. And I think what Minnie does with a lot of her teaching is she tries to make, and maybe she could elaborate on this better than I can, but she tries to make men understand that. You know, that's kind of where she's going with it. Is
yeah, it's about trying to find and remove the blocks that are actually stopping someone from being naturally confident. You know, I'm of the belief that people aren't born riddled with self-doubt and scared to speak to people and, you know, lacking confidence. I think these are things that we're conditioned, mm-hmm. That are conditioned into us throughout life. So, you know, if you've got a huge fear of rejection that's stopping you from going to speak to a woman or to speak to anybody sometimes, you know, then you can deal with that. You can actually process that. But the answer is not to learn how to be somebody else and be that person instead. Essentially, that's what the pickup industry does. It's like teaching somebody to be a really good actor, so they can feel confident playing that role. But that's no good, because then you're only confident playing that role, and then you still feel like this low self-worth person underneath. So you need to get to that low self-worth person underneath and help them develop their self-worth from the inside. It's really the only way to improve somebody's life in the long run.
It's about being comfortable in your own skin to some degree. I mean, and how do we get there? And I think the irony is, some of us who might, you know, struggle with, you know, anxiety, social anxiety, fear of others, confidence, etc. The only way to get better at it, I don't know if you'd agree with this, Minnie, is by practicing. It is by getting out there. Is by taking some risks and yeah. talking to people more often than not.
Yeah, you've got to put yourself into situations, and it's not just with dating, you know, in any area of
life.
Right. You know, I was very scared, for example, to step out on a stage a couple of weeks ago and do a Q&A to 400 people with questions that I didn't know I was going to be asked.
You
know, but I understand that the nerves that I feel, that's just fine. It's because there's something in me that associates that with danger, and so I just have to know that actually it's not dangerous, and that, you know, even the worst case scenario, I'm going to be okay, and actually the process of doing that is helping me heal on the inside. So I'm quite keen to throw myself into things that are pushing me like that, because I know I like to live on the edge of fear, and that's how we grow. You know, if you want to grow as a person, which we all should, because if we don't grow, then we get stuck and we get down and depressed, and that doesn't feel good either. That's a different type of pain. So if we want to grow into our fully realized selves, then we have to keep pushing ourselves outside of our current comfort zone and into discomfort, and then we have to learn to become comfortable there. And that's just what we need to do in all areas of life, to just become and develop into our best selves. And that can be an enjoyable process when you sort of open up to it.
Well, I think, you know, what's so interesting to me, Matthew, is that you guys have really touched on a deep existential, I think, existential problem with our culture, with being human, I suppose. All the things
yes.
that we do to not be human, right?
Yeah.
The things
yeah.
that we actually need: empathy, concern, care for others, the ability to love, the ability to be intimate in different situations, the ability not to offend, all those things. And yet so many of us aren't equipped, or and I don't know, is that about our upbringing? Is that because we didn't, you know, go to Sunday school more often? We didn't read a lot of books. Like, I mean, what are we talking about here? You know, I think that's what's so brilliant about the film. Love to know, Matthew, how many times did you shut off the camera and just go, holy smokes, I can't believe what these guys just said, or I can't believe what we just captured here? Were there a lot of moments like that?
There were more than I can remember, to be honest.
Oh, geez.
I mean,
I bet.
And the thing is, there's a lot of stuff that isn't in the film as well.
I bet, yeah.
That was extremely compelling. And would have made for, you know, a great documentary or part of the but this is one of the things with Barnaby, my co-director, and my brother, is you know, that process of trying to figure out, okay, what you're trying to do essentially is, you can't cover everything, so you're trying to kind of capture in essence what this is about, you know, and how this operates. But there was so many I think there was definitely in the early days, because we'd kind of, you know, we'd gone to New York and we were doing interviews with people on the street, and we were waiting for an interview with Justin Wayne, who's featured quite heavily in the documentary, and but we were kind of treading water around that interview, and we didn't really have much material. We had some street interviews with New Yorkers talking about dating and a couple of other people that had written books on dating. But then I remember meeting Justin and coming away from that thinking, I cannot believe that we've just got that. I can't believe we've got we've just had that conversation. And that was repeated a lot. I mean, once you get into it more and more and more, And also, I mean, there was also some, it's trying to find the balance of, because there's a lot, I think there's a lot of shocking material in the documentary, but you've got to, in the early cuts that we did, I remember our exec producer kind of saying, look, this is too much. You know, people are not going to be able to handle this. You have to dial it down a tiny bit.
Did you guys talk at all about Tom Cruise's role in Magnolia? Did that come up while you were making the film, or the Frank Mackey character? You guys remember?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Which I actually personally think is Tom Cruise's best role ever by a huge margin. I really, really like how he plays that character. We did try, because that character is based on Ross Jeffries.
Oh, okay, good.
Who's in the documentary.
Right, of course.
Yeah, and very closely based on Ross Jeffries, actually. Although Tom Cruise kind of took it, he took the sort of manner, he made him much more a kind of Atlas-type character, you know, with the armbands and the long hair, and whereas that's not really how Ross Jeffries is as a person. But a lot of the stuff that he talks about in that scene in Magnolia where he's teaching his, I can't remember what it's called, like super seduction school or whatever, a lot of that material is based on stuff that Ross Jeffries wrote or said, and we did try to get the rights to feature that clip.
Oh, okay.
From New Line, I think it's New Line Cinema, but you know, for whatever reason they declined. But I would have liked to put that in, but in the end it didn't make it in. But yes, I'm very aware of that.
I remember seeing the film, and you watch the scene or the scenes with him, and you watch his journey and so on, and just the whole film and how it's all tied together. It doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense up front, but you got to wait for the last 15 or 20 minutes to really start to see the threads connecting. But yeah. Watching his character, I remember. You just go, okay, please tell me that people like that don't actually exist, right? Like, this can't be true. Like, who does this resonate with? Like, can't you see through that? You know, you just want to shake somebody and go, please, you're paying how much to be here? You know, it's Minnie. Can you talk a bit about that? I don't know what it is, but that self denial, or that, you know, I think it was Ross Jeffries again earlier on in the film who talked about, you know, for him there was no emotional register when he was working through some of this. It's almost pathological. Like, I mean, I've got so many questions here, but Matthew, too, as you were interviewing some of these guys, were there ever aha moments? I've got a few questions embedded there. One for you, Minnie, one for Matthew. I know we're on a Skype call here, but either one of you dive in. It's fascinating to me that there aren't more aha moments where somebody like, what was his name, Julian, or somebody like that goes, holy smokes, did you just hear what came out of my mouth? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. Well, I think it's actually really interesting that these people know that they're being filmed, you know, and some of the footage was actually given to Matt to use, which is interesting. So it shows like how far in this journey they are, and that they actually think that's going to show them in a good light. But unfortunately, it does to some people, and I think we've got to sort of understand where the students are coming from in that sense, because this whole industry was started by somebody who, Ross Jeffries, who was so unsuccessful with women that he had to resort to NLP and hypnosis to sort of get any results at all. And you know, it seems strange that people would go to somebody like that for advice, rather than asking somebody who's actually very good with women. And I think it's because people who are very good with women, they will just tell people to be themselves, which is the truth. You know, that is what you've got to do if you want to be successful and actually have somebody attract somebody who's right for you. But that's not very helpful to somebody who feels like they're being themselves already and isn't getting any results, because they don't really realize that they need to go on this journey of self-development to become their true self, that actually they're a sort of imprisoned version of themselves at the moment.
Minnie, would you say, and hey, Matthew, are you back with us?
I am.
Oh, that's amazing. You got to love it when technology works. I'm watching here. I see you drop off the call and I'm like, oh, terrific. Yes. We're going to have to dial him back in. Yeah, yeah. The nuances of digital relationships, eh? Minnie, would you say some of these instructors, or most of these instructors, don't know who they really are? In other words, they're avoiding their true selves, as like a French existentialist like Camus or Sartre or somebody would say? Or,
yes, absolutely.
Or might you say they actually do know themselves and they still choose to exploit others for their own good?
No, I really, really don't think that's possible. I think when you go on a real journey of self-development and you start uncovering the layers, you start to have realizations that, you know, things like honesty and treating people well is nicer. And I mean, it's quite difficult to explain, because a lot of my understanding has come from, you know, doing thousands of hours of meditating and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So it's you have realizations when you sit and study your body and pain and how things work. You just notice patterns over time of what's going on, and things just become very, very clear. And it's quite difficult to sort of explain that in a few paragraphs, obviously, otherwise, you know, because if you could really understand that through someone explaining it quickly, nobody would go and meditate for 1,000 hours. You really sort of have to go on that journey yourself. But no, it's very clear to me that they're avoiding themselves, and they start to create an egoic character. So they start to sort of act like this alpha male character. And then what happens is that they get rewarded by that. Mm. So that behavior that's not really them then gets them some women and gets them some respect of other men. And so what happens is they're doing the process of growth, you know, pushing themselves into discomfort and growing into it, but they're doing it in the wrong direction. They're doing it into they're developing a character rather than developing themselves. And I don't think they understand that. I think sometimes people do start to understand that after a long time, you know, like Paul Janker did, you know, after a while he sort of realized, oh, I've become so cut off. Because, you know, the more you develop a character that's not really you, the more you lose the connection with your true self and your real feelings, and then you start to become feelingless.
Well, there's and I think there's a real temptation to be so to watch this film and to just be so cynical about the other, about humanity, and say, well, and particularly men, I suppose, and say, wow, there is no hope. But I, again, Matthew Barnaby, I love that fact that you guys draw out, at least I thought that there is hope, that people do have aha moments, that people do grow, and as you say, many develop, you know, self-develop and so on. But there's a part of me that wonders about a few of these guys, if there's any hope for them at all.
Well, I think some people become lifers, you know, and I think the journey back from that is maybe too long and too difficult. I don't know. Or maybe it isn't, you know. I mean, but I think it is really important that there is a hopeful element to this film. And I think also what we've tried very hard to do is have a compassionate element as well, in the sense of trying to look at, okay, why do people get involved in this? And that's really what we're trying to do now in terms of the broader conversation around the film.
Right.
Is, you know, we've had shaming campaigns of the pickup industry. We've had a lot has been written about them. A lot has been and that hasn't really changed things that much, I don't think. And I suppose what we're trying to do is we're trying to kind of for this documentary is trying to kind of reach out to the student and go, look, we understand why you might feel the way you do, but just be very careful about getting involved in this lifestyle and this subculture, because these are the potential traps. And I think what's very, very difficult is some of what is said is actually, I mean, there's a, for example, I was watching a YouTube video with one of the instructors as we're making it, and one of his, and so it's kind of a how-to video, and one of the points is, okay, point number one, you must be comfortable with yourself. Now, the thing is, no one's going to argue with that. You know, there's nothing wrong with saying that as a piece of advice. The problem is, it's all the other bits of advice that get tacked onto that.
Right.
And it becomes, Minnie's used this expression quite a few times, but it becomes a very slippery slope of, okay, well, this bit of advice sounds quite reasonable. And as a result, there's a kind of tendency, or there's a possibility of believing, well, so is all the other advice. And especially when you're seeing it there, and they've kind of crafted this very successful image on social media, and they're presenting their life as a life that you want. you know, as somebody who's shy and socially awkward and maybe struggles to meet people or struggles with dating. And I think that's what makes it so difficult is oh.
Did we lose Minnie?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, good.
Okay, so I think I dropped. Okay. Hey, sorry. So that was just to sum up.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes it so difficult.
Well, it makes it so difficult. It's so. I mean, it's the exploitation of, it seems to me, of fear and of loneliness and of social anxiety. And of course, the lifestyle advertising does that all the time. We're sold products that, you know, use this shampoo and you'll get the great relationship, et cetera. Those are always sort of the implied messages, right? But it isn't usually at the expense of others, and that's what's so deeply disturbing to me about the whole industry. And yet, you know, thanks to you guys, there does seem like there's a hopeful element. I can't believe it works with anybody. That's what's just kind of mind-boggling to me on a certain level. There's a line, and I think I can't remember whose name it was, but I think it might have been Marcus who said something about your objective is not to listen to the girls at all. I mean, isn't that just in and of itself a fundamentally damning statement? Isn't that enough, you know, for somebody to hear that and go, wow, this guy's a lunatic.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This guy doesn't have it. What is he talking about? You know, I want a relationship here. I'm actually, but maybe that's not what really this
well,
is.
Well, I think if you feel disempowered and you feel like when somebody rejects you, that disempowers you, then not listening to that rejection and not paying attention to it is one way of trying to empower yourself
right.
back.
Right, it's
Does
one way of
sense?
Overcoming it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I think carry on.
No, go on.
I was just going to say, I think people don't realise that there's an alternative. I think that's
nice.
The real main issue, is that it seems to them like a choice between having no success with women ever or learning all these tricks to get success with women.
Right.
And that seems better than what they had. And you know what? I kind of empathize with that, you know, because I think if I'd gone my whole life and no man had ever been interested in me and I thought it was something to do with me, and then someone said, oh, here you go, learn these tricks and suddenly you'll get a bit of interest, I can't say that I wouldn't be interested to find out more about that too. So I can understand why people get sucked into it.
Oh,
and I
think totally.
The thing is, it's a slippery slope. They don't start by saying, look, don't ever listen to anything a woman says ever, just treat her badly. That's not where they start with. They start with little things. And then, you know, there's these huge seminars with, you know, how groupthink works.
Yeah.
And especially when these people tend to be people that don't have the strength to stand out as an individual anyway.
So,
you know, it can be a very dangerous combination.
It does make me wonder. I mean, you can't watch a film like this and not sort of put yourself into some of these folks' shoes and say, you know, how would I have responded? Would I have done something like this? I remember, Minnie, you'll appreciate this and probably smile, and I bet you've heard stories like this, but I remember, no joke, about 35 years ago, and I'm married and have two kids and in a loving relationship, believe me, and I'm at a club and I send a woman a drink that I'd sort of met on the dance floor by accident, right? And she was like total rejection, just not happening. I'll never forget my friend Rob sitting there, who I haven't seen in 20 years. And him looking at me, oh, buddy, I'm so sorry. Like, it was, like, this is the huge moment, right? Like, it's so stuck with me. And these moments of rejection.
That,
yeah, go.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, how long ago is this?
Oh, listen, I'm 53, so this is 30 years ago at least. This is my early 20s.
Isn't that crazy that you remember that moment so clearly?
So
I mean,
clearly.
I think that's the that's the sort of power of being rejected.
It is.
The power of rejection. I have moments like that I can remember from. It's remarkable because it hurts so much.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
You're so vulnerable going in. You've set up this expectation. Oh, if and only if I just need a little bit. It's about companionship and and this is what I find so interesting too. And sadly, we're going to have to wrap up the conversation here in a second or two. And I just feel like we're getting started. But. You know, Andrew, one of the students, I think near the end of the film, you know, he actually admits, and I'm so glad you left this in the film, but I think he says it's, you know, it's rare when it works out. And I think that's just we could have talked about that for 45 minutes, because that, it seems to me, becomes the launching point for all these other conversations about what's healthy and what isn't healthy when dealing with other human beings, right? And how to address that. I mean, but yeah, I think you're right, that kind of pain and rejection really does go deep.
It stays.
Yeah, and the temptation is to, you know, bubble wrap your heart and form this protective layer of a being somebody else around you, numbing yourself to the pain of rejection. But the problem is that when you numb yourself to the pain of rejection, you numb yourself to everything else, because you can't just numb one feeling. You can just numb your feelings in general. So then you also lose joy and love and all the other things that come with it, and you just become pathological.
Everything comes with a cost.
Yes, which is exactly what Paul Janker says. And, you know, but there is an antidote, and the antidote is love. And that's exactly what Paul Janker found, and as a result, you know, left the industry and moved on to better things. And that's something that you can teach as a dating coach, is that you can teach people how to love themselves and develop strength to deal with things rather than protect themselves from it.
Well, and for me, the huge takeaway is you learn to love yourself when you're surrounded by others who care and love for you in return, right? It's about community. It's about acceptance. It's about empathy. I mean, I think this is the profound insight, it seems to me, in the film. Hey, just before we wrap up, I'd love to, and I hear the Hot Docs reception was great, which is so cool. Have any of the people in the film seen it yet?
Yes.
Not only me. Oh.
So Minnie has obviously seen it.
Yes, of course.
Paul Janker has seen it as well. Paul was very, very big in the kind of pickup scene back in 2007, 2008. He used to live in New York, and he kind of operates it out of there. He's now left it behind him, and he's settled down. He's got married, and so his perspective is kind of looking back on it in the documentary. So he's seen it, and there's kind of an insider. There's a marketing insider in the documentary as well. His name is Michael in the documentary. It's not his real name. We've had to protect his identity, but he's also seen it.
It would be fascinating to find out what some of these other pickup artists, if we can even call them artists, would have to say or think about the film. I love this notion of bubble wrapping your heart, Minnie. I think that's a great way to sort of wrap it up. I often get frustrated in my interviews, my podcasts on Face to Face, because I feel like we just got started. This should be this perpetual conversation, because it doesn't really end, does it? I mean, it's this, relationships are tricky things. And thank you to you both. We've been talking with Minnie Lane and Matthew O'Connor about their new film, The Pickup Game. Hopefully coming soon to a theater near you. Matthew, can you tell us a little bit more about that? We want to keep pay attention to Instagram, Facebook page as well. Find you guys on social media. Are you doing a bit of a festival tour?
Yep. So we just finished Hot Docs a couple of weeks ago. So we're kind of in the early stages of figuring out what the next piece of the puzzle is. But you know, if people are interested in kind of keeping track of the film, we have a Facebook page. It's quite new, but it's The Pickup Game on Facebook. And on Instagram, we have an Instagram account, which is The Pickup Game Film. And Minnie, I'm sure, can also, she has her own kind of channels if people would like to kind of follow up with her or communicate with her.
My Instagram is Minnie Lane Dating. My Twitter is Minnie Lane Coach, I believe. I don't even know my own Twitter. My website is minnie-lane.com.
Excellent. Well, listen, let's all try to avoid bubble wrapping our heart in every possible way. Thank you to you both, Minnie Lane and Matthew O'Connor, today on Face to Face, talking about their new film, The Pickup Game.
Thanks
for having me.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.